I wish I could go back. I wish I could go back to those days when I was a shepherd in my father's fields, watching over his flocks. There were complications and difficulties back then, sure, but nothing like today. I can remember leading the flocks from pasture to pasture. They would listen to the sound of my voice. And at night, some of the newborn lambs, if they couldn't follow along, I would hold them in my arms and they would fall asleep as I led the flocks to greener pastures. I wish I could go back. I don't want to be here today. I really don't. I don't like dealing with consequences of my own decisions. And I'm sure that you don't either. But I've gathered you, the families of Jerusalem, here today to explain to you what has happened this past year. The Ammonites had finally grown so powerful and so strong that they began striking into the promised land. They had to be answered. And we had to go into their stronghold at Ramah and defeat them once and for all to stop them from destroying our people and harassing our lands. And so I chose Joab, my general, to lead the army of Israel along with the Ark of the Covenant of God into battle against Ramah. I know that Joab is a murderer, and you know that Joab is a murderer. And even though the law said that I should have had him executed as an enemy of the state, I couldn't bring myself to do so. Not only was he family, he was the most brilliant tactician I had ever known, all of Israel had ever known. No, I needed him on my side. And so I sent Joab and the army of Israel, along with the Ark of the Covenant of God, to go and stop the forces at Rabbah for one more time. As the army marched out of Jerusalem, Nathan the prophet appeared in my palace, and he said, "King David, it would be a good idea for you to go with the army, don't you think? The king's place is to be with the army, and the Ark of the Covenant of God goes with the army. You should be with them." Dealing with prophets is always a hard thing because you never know if they're just speaking out of their own humanity or if they're speaking the very words of God. But I said to him, "No, Nathan, listen, I am exhausted. I have spent my entire life on the run from King Saul in battle after battle. We have doubled the lands of Israel. I am tired. Joab can take care of this battle on his own. I am going to stay here and rest. I deserve this." And Nathan said, "King David, God has blessed you with victory after victory after victory. He's given you success wherever you go. He will give you success here. Please go with them." But I said, "Nathan, even victory is exhausting. Even success is exhausting. And furthermore, God is present wherever we go. He is present in the highest of heavens, and he is present all the way down to Sheol. No, God will go and win the battle, and I will stay here." And the prophet said another word. He left. I wasn't lying. I was tired. Have you ever been so tired that you laid down to go to sleep and you find that you could not rest? I was so exhausted mentally and physically, emotionally, and I couldn't sleep. So even though I wrestled back and forth, I couldn't fall asleep. So I began wandering around the palace, And as I was wandering around the palace for a while, I went up to the roof of the palace to the top, and I began looking down over Israel, over Jerusalem. It was a full moon that night, and I could see the people below me. Many of the lamps of the houses had already gone out, but there were still many people on the roofs of their houses enjoying dinners and meals and fellowship with their friends and family members and neighbors. And for a moment, as I stood there with the light of the moon shining upon them, I felt like a shepherd again, all those days ago in my father's fields. And I realized maybe being king was a little bit like being a shepherd, to watch over the flock, to lead them and to guard them and to guide them. Maybe just a little bit of a bigger responsibility. As I stood up there, one of the houses below us, just to the west, I saw movement. And there was a woman bathing on the roof of her house. That's not abnormal. We put baths on the roofs of our house to collect rainwater so that we would cleanse ourselves to make us clean ceremonially according to the Torah so that we could continue to worship God. And under the cover of darkness, it was never a problem, especially on top of the roof of your house. But that night, because the moon was full and the candles flickered, I could see her. And I should have looked away, but I found that I could not. She was the most beautiful woman I have ever laid eyes on. And when she finished and went inside, I went down into the palace. It was late, but I found one of my guards, Aram, was still awake. And I said, Aram, just now I was on the roof of the palace and a house just to the west of us, and I saw a woman up there, and she was the most beautiful woman I've ever seen with my eyes. Do you know who she is? With any luck, she was just some servant girl. And Aram smiled, and he said, oh, I know who you're talking about. That's Bathsheba. She's Uriah's wife, one of your mighty men. If you ask me, King David, God loves Uriah just a little bit more than the rest of us for giving him a wife like Bathsheba. Wow. And I said to him, go get her. Bring her here. And Aram said, I'm sorry, my lord, maybe you didn't understand me. I said that Bathsheba is Uriah's wife. I said to him, I heard what you said. Now go, get another guard and one of the servant girls and bring her to my bedchambers. And Aram said, no, please don't do this. Please don't do this. You can't do this. Uriah is one of your most faithful men. He fought with you and protected you against King Saul. Even now, he is on the battlefield and he fights for you. Let me go get one of your wives. Let me go get one of your concubines. And I said, no, I am the king of Israel. Not Uriah, not you, me. God chose me as the king. I defeated Goliath. I slew the Ammonites. I have doubled the lands of Israel. Me, not you, not anyone else. I deserve this, not another word. Go! And he went. And he brought Bathsheba to my bedchambers. And she was more beautiful up close in person. How is this possible? She looked nervous, and I said, come sit next to your king. It's okay. I nodded to Aram to leave. The servant girl hesitated, but she went. They all left. And then I took her, and I slept with her. And when it was all over, I sent her away. I put the matter out of my mind, and I began continuing my work throughout the palace. Until later that summer, Aram came to me, and he had a letter with a seal on it. And I said, Is this news of the battle at Ramah? And Aram, no. He handed me the letter, and on the letter was the seal from the house of Uriah. I opened it up. And in the letter were three words, just three words. No greeting, no signature, just three words. I am pregnant. How could this happen? How is this possible? Who gets pregnant on the first try? This would ruin me. All of Israel looked to me as their king. All of Israel loved me and trusted me. No one would ever trust me again or follow me again, certainly not to the level that they currently did. You know, I was a hero. I couldn't allow this to happen. I couldn't bear the consequences of what would happen if this would get out. What could I do? I sent word to the front lines at Ramah. I had Joab sent Uriah here to bring me an update about the battle. A few days later, Uriah came into my throne room. And Uriah was older than me, but he carried himself like a warrior. And I said to him, "What news is there of the battle at Ramah?" And Uriah said, "My king, Ramah is well fortified, and they have many provisions to last for a long time. It is going to be a hard fight. We have been pressing them, and they continue to press back harder. We will win this, but it is going to be a long, long battle. Fortunately, before we arrived, we received word that the women and children fled the city before we began our siege. So God has been good to us on that account." And I said, "Oh, good, good, Uriah. Thank you. Thank you. Now, you have had a long journey. Go home, get some rest, wash your feet, and we'll see you later." And that was it. It was over. He would go home, he would sleep with his wife, and then no one would be the wiser. Everyone would think everything was fine, and no one had to know. Except it wasn't over. Except it didn't go that way. I found out from my messengers in the morning that Uriah refused to go home. He slept in the palace with the servants. So I called him back into my throne room, and I said, "Maybe you didn't understand me. Oh, you have been so loyal for all of this time. Please go home, eat some food, drink some wine, sleep next to your wife. You deserve this." And Uriah said, "My king, the Ark of the Covenant of God and the army of Israel sleep in open fields. If you asked me to follow you to the depths of Sheol, I would do so. But my men are as loyal to me as I am to you. And while they are at war, I will find no peace." I tried to get him drunk. I had him dine at my table. I gave him the choicest wine. I saw him drunker than I've ever seen him before. But even in his inebriated state, he refused to go home and sleep with his wife. Even drunker than I've ever seen a human being, he still clung on to his duty and honor. So then I wrote a letter. I wrote a letter, and I addressed it to Joab, and I sealed it with the seal of the house of David, and I handed it to Uriah, and I sent him to bring the letter back to Joab and to rejoin the battle that he so desperately wanted to be a part of. The letter read to Joab, "Put Uriah at the front of the line where the fighting is fiercest, and when it grows unbearable, withdraw from him and allow him to die." I had no other choice. I couldn't bear the consequences of my actions. A few weeks later, a messenger came into my throne room, and he was shaking and scared. And he said, "Oh, my king, Joab sent me to give you the news that we were fighting, and the fighting was fierce, and we launched a counterattack. And as we chased them to the front gates of the stronghold, their archers shot down and killed many of our men, including Uriah, one of your mighty men." And I said to him, "Don't worry. Let your heart not be troubled. Tell Joab that the sword consumes all, and he should not allow this to trouble his heart, but he should redouble his efforts and be encouraged as we take this stronghold." Aram told me that Bathsheba was grieving and in mourning. And I told Aram to allow her the 7 customary days of grief, and then to bring her here into the palace. I would marry her and protect her as king. And so we did. And she gave birth to my son, the most beautiful child you have ever seen. I looked at this child and knew this would be my heir. This would be the one who would be king of Israel next. And that was it. I'd gotten away with it. You know, I was a hero here in Jerusalem. Look at King David. He cares for his soldiers so much so he will wed one of his soldiers' poor widows and take care of her and treat her as if she was his own family. I got away with it. No one knew. And then one day, Nathan the prophet appeared unannounced in my throne room. I steeled myself ready for a fight, but the prophet said to me, "King David, I need your help." "Oh, what can I do?" And the prophet said, "Nearby, there are 2 men, a rich man and a poor man. The rich man has many cattle and many sheep, while the poor man only has this one small ewe lamb. The poor man loved that lamb. He raised it. It ate from his table. It drank from his cup. He treated it like one of his own children. He loved it like his own daughter. It slept in the bed right next to him. One day, a traveler came to visit the rich man. And the rich man couldn't bring it upon himself to take one of his cattle or one of his sheep and slaughter it to serve it to the traveler. So he took the lamb of the poor man, and he killed it, and he served it to the traveler. What should we do?" And I was furious. I was furious. I'm a shepherd at heart. I know what it's like to connect with a lamb. And I said to Nathan, this man should die. He slaughtered the lamb. At the very least, he should pay four times what it was worth. And then Nathan the prophet looked at me and he said, David, you are the man. This is what the Lord says, the God of Israel. I anointed you as king, and I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave you your master's household. I gave you the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And if that wasn't enough, I would have done more. Then why have you done this despicable thing? By murdering Uriah and taking his wife, why have you despised me so much to murder Uriah and take his wife? Because you have done this, the sword will never leave your house. What you have done in secret will be held with in public. You tried to hide this, and I will take your wives and give them to another. And what you have done in darkness, I will do in full light. When no one knew, God knew. When no one else knew my sin, God knew. And I said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your rich compassion. Blot out my transgression. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love. According to your great compassion, blot out my transgression. Won't you create in me a clean heart, O God? Restore in me the joy of your salvation. Won't you create in me a clean heart, O God? Restore in me the joy of your salvation. The sacrifices of our God are a broken and a contrite heart. Against you and you alone have I sinned. The sacrifices of our God are a broken and a contrite heart. Against you and you alone have I sinned. Oh, won't you create in me a clean heart, O God? Restore in me the joy of your salvation. Oh, won't you create in me a clean heart, O God? Restore in me the joy of your salvation. Wash me white as snow, and I will be made whole. Wash me white as snow, And I will be made whole. Wash me white as snow. And I will be made whole. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love. And Nathan the prophet said, "The Lord has taken away your sin. And when you die, you will not go down to Sheol, but you will see God face to face. But because you treated the Lord with such contempt in this matter, the child that was born to you will die." That night, our child became violently ill. And for 7 days, I refused to eat. But then he died. So I got up and I ate and I washed my face. And Aram saw me and he said, "My king, I don't understand. While the child was alive, you mourned, and yet now that the child has died, you eat again. I don't understand." And I said to him, "Aram, while the child yet lived, I hoped that the Lord would relent and maybe he would save my child. But now that he's gone, I know that I will never see my child again in this life. But I have confidence that one day when I die and I see God face to face, I will see my son again." And God was good to us. Somehow in the brokenness of our lives, God gave me and Bathsheba another child, a son, Solomon. And God loved him, and I knew one day this child would become the next king of Israel. And when spring came again, and I received word from Aram and from Joab that the battle was about to be resolved, I went out to march with the army of Israel, and we took Ramah. And the battle was over, the promised land was secure. And that is what has happened this last year in Jerusalem, and why I wanted to gather you to tell you of what has gone on. I've heard some of you speak and some of you say that what I did and that I had committed adultery with Bathsheba, no. What I did to her was much, much worse. Some of you said, "I let Joab allow Uriah to die." No. I was responsible for his death, along with all those other men who died with him. I thought that I could escape the consequences of my sin. And as I tried to escape the consequences of my sin, I found that I could not. And the same is true for you. The same is true for you. If you think you can escape the consequences of your sin, you will discover that you cannot. Some of you are here and you have secret sin that you are trying to hide from everyone and you are trying to avoid the consequences of those sins. Stop. Stop right now. It's not worth it. And don't stop because you want to try to avoid the consequences. Stop because there is a God in heaven who loves you and is freely ready to forgive you. and restore your relationship, the joy of your salvation with him. Some of you are here and you're thinking about sinning and you're making a consideration to sin and you think, well, maybe God will just forgive me. Don't do it. It's not worth it. The consequences will last a lifetime. It's not worth it. Yes, there is forgiveness from God, but there are consequences here on earth. It is not worth it, and it is not worth trading knowledge of God. It is not worth trading the beauty of God and the glory of knowing God for the momentary pleasures of sin. If you think you can avoid the consequences of sin, you will discover that you cannot. Sin is never worth it.